Hey y'all, I'm Casey Bell from the Shake Up Learning Show, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
It turns into a dog and a pony show, right? I mean, it's so planned out and scripted out. And I don't know, to me, it just becomes really inauthentic.
Welcome to Devil's Advocate, a Leader of Learning podcast series. Join co-hosts Rochelle Danae Poth and me, Dan Krynas, as we tackle trending topics in education from all angles, backed by sound research, where no topic is too big or too small, and where you can be part of the action. Let's dive right in.
Well, welcome back into another episode of the series Devil's Advocate. And this episode in the month of November here in 2020, and man, has it been a weird 2020, but we are set to discuss the topic of teacher evaluations. As we say here on Devil's Advocate, we want to tackle trending topics. And I think that this one has definitely been trending very much so for a while, but especially as we've gotten started here in this highly unusual 2020-21 school year. But before we talk about all of that, let me welcome on Rochelle, and happy to have you back. I know you've been really busy lately, and school is looking different now and everything, yeah. But glad you could join us again here.
Yeah, I'm always glad to be here. I love our conversations. It pushes me to think about a lot of different things and look at both sides. So looking forward to this one today too.
Yeah, me too. And I don't know, this topic popped into my head, especially specifically, I should say, recently, as my district, let me back up, my state, all right, so I'm in Connecticut, my state has gone a little bit lax on teacher evaluation requirements. I should say that going all the way back to the end of last year, they did away with them for the remainder of the school year in 2019-2020. So basically from March through the end of the year, they said, you know, obviously everyone was home. So evaluation or observations could only really be done virtually and you know, through Google Classroom. And honestly, a lot of teachers weren't even using any kind of video chatting platform yet. So that wasn't even a thing. But they did away with them. And now this year, we've just gotten started where the administrators are having beginning of the year, you know, sit down meetings with teachers to set their goals for the year and start the process. And then throughout the rest of the year, the observations and evaluations will continue. So it looks different, but it is a thing, and it's back. It has reared its ugly head, so to speak, again, and we're right back in it. I know you just mentioned off the air, you're not quite sure yet where your school is at or your district in terms of evaluations. I'm curious though, like in the past, what has it been like?
Yeah, we, Pennsylvania, I mean, there's a different process involved, but as a veteran teacher, we are observed. I mean, there's informal observations and there's formal ones. So there's a lesson plan that you fill out, some different paperwork, and then you have, you know, goals that you set, professional learning goals for the year. And depending on what you do now in the past couple of years, like I focused it on teaching Spanish. I'm the only Spanish teacher. So I have students Spanish 1 through 4 if they stay with me. And so I've tried to tie it into specific content or verbs or things, whatever I notice that the students tend to struggle with, and then really working on those aspects of it and trying a lot of different methods and kind of tracking, you know, their progress throughout the year. We get observed by one of the administrators, and then we have kind of a pre-observation kind of a meeting. And then of course they come in and observe us. Then we get the follow-up observation where we have the chance to talk and go over it. There is a part where we do kind of like a self-evaluation, and it's the same form that they're using to rate us as well. And then of course we have the conversation. And then at the end of the year, you get your kind of end of the year rating, whether it's satisfactory or unsatisfactory, but some of it's tied into, you know, data based on states and testing and all of that gets factored into it for our school. So there's a lot that gets added into it, but I've never had a problem. Like I've always enjoyed whenever administrators come into the classroom, and I honestly have never cared if it's been announced or unannounced. I would rather just pop in anytime because, like, I don't know. It's nice to see them come in, especially, but it's hard for them to get into every classroom, especially now where there's so many things going on. But even a quick 5 or 10 minutes, I've never minded it. It's always hard for me to like plan specifically what I'm going to do, because just in the nature of teaching a language, it changes so quickly. But I don't know. So this year, I'm not entirely sure yet, since we were virtual for the first 9 weeks and we're hybrid right now, what that's going to look like. But like you, I've been looking at a lot of different articles coming out, conversations that have been happening, to see how it's going to change. Because clearly, we still have to evaluate teachers. And it's, how do you do that?
Yeah. And you brought up a lot of things, and I'm hoping that we can touch upon all of them throughout the conversation. One thing I want to go back to that you said was about that end of the year summative rating, whether it's satisfactory, unsatisfactory, or maybe a scale from 1 through 4. One of the flexibilities that the state of Connecticut has implemented now this school year, considering how differently schools look these days, is to do away, temporarily anyway, with the summative rating. So basically, the way that observations and evaluations have changed for me in my district is there is no summative evaluation at the end of the year, and all observations are going to be informal. So you mentioned like the difference between, I know you didn't mention the terms informal and formal. I think you said announced and unannounced. So basically, they're all going to be unannounced. But I don't know about your experience. In my experience, most good, supportive administrators do kind of give you an idea for when they're going to be coming in. And, you know, like you, I agree that, and I'm not a classroom teacher at this point in my career, but if I was and when I was, it really wouldn't have mattered to me much whether it was announced or not. But I think that brings up one of the first kind of sticking points that I have with observations. And I should put this out there, and I don't want to assume, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you've not been in an admin-like position where you've had to evaluate other teachers?
Right.
Right. So I have been, albeit a bit of a limited experience. It was one school year, but I have been. And so I think that qualifies me at least a little bit to sort of see both sides of this. And I agree wholeheartedly with when you said it's very hard for administrators to find the time to get all the observations done, especially now where their job has transitioned so much so to being much more focused on the operations side of running a building and running a building with all the COVID regulations and restrictions versus, you know, really getting that chance to be the instructional leader that they're supposed to be. Where was I going with this? Oh, announced and unannounced. Let's bring up the fact that announced observations. Okay. So usually in my world, in my experience, that means you got a pre-observation meeting, you have the observation, and then you have a post-observation meeting. It turns into a dog and a pony show, right? I mean, inevitably, like it's so planned out and scripted out. And I don't know, to me, it just becomes really inauthentic.
Yeah. I laugh at the dog and pony show because that's terminology that has been around for years. And in, I don't know, opening bag, like, was it bag can of worms? I don't know, bag of worms, whatever it is. But you do think about it. But I get both sides of that, right? Because an administrator wants to know, what have you been working on? What are the students going to be doing? What are your activities? What are the standards? What are your goals? What do you hope to, I don't know, accomplished by the end of the period? How are you going to provide enrichment activities? Like, those are just some of the questions that we're asked. And so it does help us to think about it, because in my school, years ago, we were turning in lesson plans. And for me, I was teaching 5 different courses, and my lesson plans were like 7 pages long. And I'm sure other teachers feel the same way. As a language teacher, I might think that I'm going to cover a certain grammar, whatever the topic might be for the day. But then depending on the students or something with the timing or my timing is off, I don't get through that plan. And so always planning for a full week was tough, but it does force you to really think about the methods you're using, if you're bringing technology into the classroom, the standards that you're addressing, and then also, what are the students like? Do the students know not just what they're learning, but why they're learning it, what it matters? So it is a good opportunity to sit down and to think about it. But then are you kind of held to that as though it's a script? Is something that I was always kind of feeling like, okay, I turned this in a week ago. Now I changed it, which you can always change it and let them know like there's been some updates. But then I do feel as though you lose that element of surprise or that authenticity that it might be, because you're nervous potentially about, like, I have to make sure that I do this and say this and cover the standard and do these activities and make sure I'm moving around the classroom. So either way, I think, I don't know, I don't have a definitive stance on it, but years ago I did feel like that, and not for myself, because I feel like I'm the same, whether it's an announced, unannounced, formal, informal, whatever. It's just the way I run my classroom. However, I am more conscious about certain things, and I do really like having some clear goals that I set out that helps the administrator to kind of focus in on areas where I might think that I need some feedback or that I could improve. Because goodness knows, there's a lot of improvements to be made. And so that part of it, I do really value that you give them kind of an outline of what you're hoping to accomplish, just like with students. I mean, they need our feedback. It's not like we're asking them, like, tell me what you think you're going to learn today, and I'm going to evaluate that for you. But the Dog and Pony Show is definitely something that has been around for with so many things.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up so many of the pros to evaluations and even the announced evaluation or observation, you know, and by the way, this is our show. So it doesn't matter if you take one side or the other. It's all about looking at both sides and addressing them and supporting both sides. So that's okay. I don't know where I stand either. I guess I just feel like more times than not, I've seen those announced observations, those formal observations, just be that Dog and Pony Show. And to your point or your question about how people might feel kind of boxed in, that they have to just stay in line with what they planned out. To be honest, if I was an administrator, and again, I've been in the position where I'm coming in to evaluate, I would actually rather see that level of spontaneity where it's not so planned out, or the teacher needs to change something or react to something on the fly. Now, again, I'm not right now currently in an administrative or an evaluative role, but as an instructional coach, I go into teachers' classrooms every single day, multiple times a day. I was in a classroom just last week or a couple weeks ago where we have a brand new teacher, you know, new to the classroom this year, and she tried something for the first time. She tried breakout rooms in Google Meet. And she's actually pretty reflective and kind of hard on herself. And afterwards, she said, I don't know, it didn't really go as well as I wanted it to. And I said, hang on, stop right there. Because what I saw was you took a risk and you weren't afraid to try something. And even though it kind of deviated from the plan a little bit, I love seeing that. So I see your point about the announced observations and where it might get a little sticky sometimes. But that's why I like sort of the informality of it and the unannounced observations a little bit better, because I think in those more authentic situations, the administrator, the evaluator can see how a teacher is planning, but in the moment, right? So ideally, like you said before, there's a focus for that lesson, whether you call it a learning target or an objective or whatever, right? SWABAT is one that a lot of teachers have been using for years, or the I can statement. Yeah. There's a goal for you to get to. And if something isn't quite getting, if you as the classroom teacher see that something is going to get in the way of your students meeting that objective by the end of the period, like, yeah, we want to see you try and change something up.
Yeah, totally agree. And I am pretty good with the spontaneity, I will say, just even sometimes, and I've worried about that because sometimes I have an idea in mind, or it might be a worksheet, an activity that I planned, and I think about it, and then I totally change and veer from my path that I thought that I was going to do. And I mean, I write things on the board, like, this is what I plan to do today. And I hope that it's not the day that an administrator comes in and says, like, wait a minute, that's not exactly what it says on the board. Because sometimes the students come in and you get that sense of something's happening in their world, or they're just like, you just know that it's one of those days where you kind of need to mix up the plan. And so being flexible, especially now and spontaneous, I always think about, well, I'm just going to go with what I think is the best for this moment. And it might not be the plan that I had intended. And if I'm observed at this point, then I will just explain, like, yes, this is what I was thinking I was going to do, but this is the reason that I changed it. And I think that's especially now more than ever. I mean, as teachers, we have to be flexible in what we're doing because things are changing so, so rapidly and so much that we have to develop those skills and to take risks and not be afraid to just be spontaneous. And if somebody comes in and to observe us and we're not expecting it, then just be ourselves.
You bring up a great point that I do want to discuss in maybe a minute or two about the gotcha aspect of evaluations and observations and teachers worried, at the very least, teachers being worried that an administrator may come in and try and catch them doing the wrong thing versus helping them or helping to see that they're doing the right thing. Before we get back into that, though, I did just want to dive into some of the research and articles that I found, and just like we do here playing devil's advocate, you know, I want to highlight both sides. And so I wanted to start with, there's an article called Capturing the Dimensions of Effective Teaching, and it came from the Education Next organization and publication, written by Thomas J. Kane. And in this article by Mr. Kane, he writes that the goal of classroom observations is to help teachers improve practice and thereby improve student outcomes. A classroom observation system that bears no relationship to student outcomes will, of course, be no use in improving them. He goes on to say that in theory, classroom observations allow teachers to be more discerning about their own practice and that their improved practice will yield improved student outcomes. I mean, that's the goal. Right. And I guess I wanted to start with that in terms of the research, because I think it's kind of a no-brainer, and I don't want to insult anyone listening to this podcast, but I think everyone knows, if you're in education, you know that ideally the goal is to use the evaluation system in such a way that highlights and recognizes the good things that teachers are doing, but also allows the administrator to use the evaluation as that system that asserts their ability to be that instructional leader. I also want to point out that I don't often get a chance to cite my own research. So in my research that I've done for my dissertation, I studied school administrators, principals, assistant principals, site directors, and many of them, I don't know off the top of my head how many I should, but many of them actually in the data, in the research, showed that for them, in terms of being that instructional leader, the evaluation process is the system that allows them to help teachers improve. And in my case, my research talked about how administrators, how school leaders help inspire growth mindsets. You mentioned a few minutes ago, and don't think I didn't catch this, you said something about, like, you have a lot to continue to work on all the time as a teacher. Not everybody feels that way, but I think it is the responsibility of an instructional leader, or in this case, someone who's evaluating a teacher, to find those things that that a teacher needs to improve on. I guess my question to you, though, is, should that come from the administrator, or should that be something that the administrator helps the teacher kind of self-identify and bring out in themselves?
That's a good question. So I could flip it back to you and say, If we reversed it and we're not talking administrators and teachers, what if we're talking teachers and students?
Okay, let's talk about teachers and students then for a second. Well, that's a great question. So I think, honestly, I think there are times for both. And there's something to what you said a few minutes ago about how your process, and mine too, my evaluation process at my school allows for the teacher to talk about some of their goals and things that they've been working on too, kind of like a self-assessment. But I think there are times for both. So if we're talking about students, clearly, and I don't love standardized assessments. We've already talked about, you know, assessment and grading here a couple episodes ago. But I think there are definitely times where, as a teacher, you need to say, okay, based on what I'm seeing, whether it's a standardized assessment, homework assignment, formative, summative assessment, this is what I'm noticing that you, Sally student, are maybe struggling in a little bit. And here's how I think we can continue to work to get better. But I also think through individual, you know, one-on-one conferencing with students or a small group, definitely allowing the student to hopefully identify their own strengths and weaknesses. And then through that, the student can kind of come up with their own goals. I mean, that's ideal. I don't know how many teachers out there are doing that. I hope more are doing it than are not. But I really do think that's powerful. And so I guess my answer in terms of a teacher evaluation system is one that does balance those two things, where the administrator is finding, hopefully not too many, but finding something, one or two things that they can identify in that first evaluation and then check back in on when they get back into the classroom. I don't know, that's my answer.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I didn't, whenever you were asked about that, I think often I try to say or think to myself or even say to my students, okay, like, just substitute the analogy and how would you kind of react or respond in that situation? So just thinking about students. So I agree with what you said too. So as a teacher, whenever I do have the observations, evaluations coming up, I clearly identify some areas or things that I would like. Years ago, I said, one of the things is I say, when I talk, okay, how many times am I saying, is it noticeable? And that is something, and I've probably said it as we've been talking now, but I worked a lot on that because I noticed that it was bothering me. The other thing was being really quick whenever a student would ask me, how do you say this in Spanish or what's this? And I would just give them the answer. Just there's the answer. So I'm totally cutting off the opportunity for them to find the answer, to go through any productive struggle and to get to it on their own. And I've worked on that. And that was something that I identified on my own because I thought, oh my gosh, I noticed that I'm doing this. And at times I still catch myself where I lean in and I want to say it and I take a breath and I pause. So I pointed a couple of those things out. But then also having some things that my administrator said to me that they had noticed. I mean, I forget what book it was. It might have been What Connected Educators Do, or it was some book that I read, and it was one giving feedback. And it was one to go on, one to glow on, one to grow on, and using that process. And so that there's something where it's, you know, it's not about, oh, you did everything that's great. Well, no, that's not the case because we always have room to grow. But you don't want to tell anybody, oh, you did everything that was terrible. And then you feel like, okay, well, if I'm so terrible, then how can I get better? There's too much to take on. So when you have that balance, and that has stuck with me for a long time. So being able to say, and for our students to even be able to identify in their own work, not just in our classroom, but other classes later on in life, like what are some of the things that I need to work on myself, being receptive to that feedback, which is something we need to help them to build their skills with, which we get practice by building our own skills with and modeling that for them. So definitely value in having both parts of that be part of the process. But it can be uncomfortable because when you point something out that you didn't think there was anything that was noticeable or that you were doing differently, you're like, wait a minute, I was doing that. And then it kind of sticks with you. But
well, let's talk about that uncomfortability for a minute. You know, what you mentioned that hopefully the administrator, the evaluator is not finding a laundry list or not, at least not pointing out a laundry list of things that the teacher can improve upon. And you mentioned, you know, providing that meaningful feedback. I had a situation where I had a very capable teacher who I was evaluating. As a matter of fact, it was the first formal evaluation I ever did on a teacher. And she was a really, really good teacher. But she was kind of new to her subject area, and that, you know, to be totally honest, I didn't go in there thinking I was gonna like grade her down because of that. I just knew she was a little bit wet behind the ears in terms of her classroom experience in that subject area, and her overall evaluation I thought was pretty good. She got mostly or almost all threes with maybe a couple of fours sprinkled in. And I can't remember that, but there might've been one or two twos, like on a scale from one to four using the Danielson rubric. And this teacher was not happy about her evaluation. And I don't know. I wondered why at first. And, you know, again, it was my first time formally evaluating someone. And I was like, you know, I thought this was actually pretty good. I thought what I saw in the classroom was pretty good. And therefore, I thought that the ratings that I gave her as scores were pretty good as well. But I think in her experience in a previous school and actually a previous state was that she just got all fours across the board. And I was kind of the first one to say, you know, you're not perfect. I'm using air quotes for those of you listening on the audio side only, you know, telling the teacher she's not quote unquote perfect. She initially had a really hard time with that. However, I stuck to my guns and I did point out a couple of areas where I felt, again, giving her meaningful feedback. We sat down and I said, here is why. Here's where I think you need to grow. And after probably a couple of weeks, after a couple of weeks of her sort of sitting with that, it actually turned out to be really positive, where she came back around and she said, man, I really could use your help in these areas. And by the end of the year, although I didn't stay at the school after that, she was doing things that she kind of didn't even think were possible, I think, at the beginning of the year. So I thought it was a success story. But I guess my point is, some teachers really do, like you said, focus on just those sort of negative or the criticisms that the administrators will give them in evaluations. And you can get 25 things that your administrator says are the glows, but there's one grow in there and you're like, wait a second. I mean, I thought I was a pretty good teacher before, but now you're like, I got to grow in this area. Like, I can't believe that. So it is uncomfortable. It definitely is.
Yeah. And, nobody wants to hear, like, especially if you think that you're doing well, right? We've all had those things where you're like, yeah, this is going really great. I'm using these different tools or strategies or whatever it is in my classroom. And then you feel comfortable or confident about it. And then that might be something that's pointed out to you. And it kind of, I'm sure it deflates you. I mean, I've been there, and not just in teaching. I mean, in other jobs that I've had where you're like, oh, okay, so I had that all wrong. But we have to be open to that feedback. And like you said, the teacher that came and had like all fours, that could bring into another discussion about, did we already talk about giving hundreds? I feel like we talked about that. And in some rating systems too, there's, you know, proficient, distinguished, it depends. I mean, they're all different. And when I self-rate, sometimes there are some areas where I have put distinguished. I won't say what areas they are, but just because I think about it.
I can see you being someone who's a little hard on herself, though.
But because there are, I'll throw out there, like, communicating with parents and families. And that is something that in the past for me, that was, it was a challenge because of the time that's involved. And not that I didn't want to do it, but that was, you know, we're balancing so many things. So I knew that I could be better at that and bring the parents in. Being connected and going out and building my network and taking advantage of like professional development and those types of things, I rated myself distinguished because I'm constantly on doing things. And so that's what I felt comfortable with. But of course, there were some areas that I rated myself even lower than what the rating was for the administrator. And I was surprised by it. So we tend to be hard on ourselves. And then of course there are times where we're like, yeah, I don't need to work on this because I already know what I'm doing. I've been teaching for a long time. I won't say how many years, but it doesn't matter. New teachers, veteran teachers, anywhere in between, we all have things that we can learn, especially as we found out since schools have been closed and we've had to embrace a lot of different technologies and teaching styles and learning environments and doing evaluations and getting feedback. It is, I mean, for a lot of us, it's an isolating experience. And so we don't have that opportunity to know if what we're doing is working. And so there has to be something in place, not just like regular school, but in all learning environments. And for now, it's what does that look like in a remote learning environment for teachers? So,
yeah, I agree. You know, just kind of diving back into the research a little bit, and I'm going back to the same article in Education Next, where it talked about certain superpowers of classroom observations. And in the article, it's admitted that it's not yet a potential superpower of classroom observations, since there's, quote, not a lot of evidence that providing such feedback leads to student outcomes. So there is doubt among the research that teacher evaluations in isolation are that impactful on student learning, which, of course, we kind of started the show talking about how that's the goal. But maybe there isn't a ton of research out there that shows that goal really holds true, which is unfortunate, honestly, because I think that something's getting in the way, right? Either the administrators aren't trained properly, they're not executing properly, or maybe the whole system is flawed. And I don't know that we have enough time really to dig into it that deeply. But, you know, just like we've talked before about kind of how standardized assessments might not be fair for students. Who knows? Depending on different evaluation systems or just evaluation in general, may not be as effective as we want it to be on teachers. And I'm actually going to cite another Education Next article. This one is called "Can Teacher Evaluation Improve Teaching?" by Eric Taylor and John Tyler. And in it, they say that there are good reasons to expect that well-designed teacher evaluation programs could have a direct and lasting effect on individual teacher performances. But they actually determined through a study of many educators in the Cincinnati public schools that actually what, and I should point out, these are mid-career teachers, not teachers who are just starting out or just finishing their careers. But literally it says, we find that teachers are more effective at raising student achievement during the school year when they are being evaluated than they were previously, and even more effective in the years after evaluation. So I think there's a couple things there. I think that means that, again, when it's kind of an announced or formalized system, teachers rise to the occasion. Maybe they're putting on a dog and pony show, but like they know for sure that they're being evaluated, and therefore they raise the bar. I think of it in terms of like an athlete who is in the last year of their professional sports contract, and they try to perform better so that they can get paid better in the next season. And that's another story. That's another topic for the evaluation talk too here about pay, like merit-based pay. But maybe we could talk about that a little bit later. So I guess the question is, does evaluation as a system, as a process, really truly affect student outcomes? Same article says, we find that teachers are, I read that already. It says, our data do not allow us to identify the exact mechanisms driving these improvements. Nevertheless, the results contrast sharply with the view that the effectiveness of individual teachers is essentially fixed after the first few years on the job. I feel like it's a little contradictory, but essentially what they found is that when teachers know they're going to be evaluated, then and only then maybe do they really raise their, raise the level of the instruction in their classrooms.
That's interesting.
Found that interesting. Yeah, definitely. And sort of to counter that, I found some more research, and this comes right from the Marzano Center. I know a lot of schools out there really, or in districts, really believe in Marzano. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, Marzano has become kind of an evaluation system unto itself. I've only really ever gone through the Danielson framework. But here's what the Marzano Center says a highly effective teacher evaluation model must include. Recognize and accurately reflect the complexity of the teaching and learning process. I think that makes a ton of sense right there. Give teachers and administrators specific instructional tools to organize their goals and attain mastery. I guess that speaks to just the resources that people have at their disposal. And again, that gets off on a different topic too about schools and districts who are a little more advantaged than others, I guess. That they rest on a foundation of research conducted in the real world environment of working classrooms. I don't really know how you can evaluate a classroom that's not in the real world. So that one confuses me a little bit, but I understand the grounding in research and research-based practices when it comes to evaluation. This one I find to be most important: be flexible and robust enough to accommodate evolving state standards and directives. I'm going to come back to that one in a minute, and effect measurable increases in student achievement and student growth over time. There's always this time factor that comes in too. And I found another article that talked about how it really advocated, the authors of the article really advocated for evaluations taking place over several school years and not just one, which I thought was an interesting take on it, because as we mentioned, when it came to student assessment, those snapshots, those standardized assessments that take place once, twice, maybe three times during the school year, and it's very isolated, they only really show you so much. But let me come back to the flexible and robust comment and how that the evaluations need to accommodate evolving state standards and directives. I think when I think that word evolving, I think that just like we want the instructional practices in the classroom to evolve And this goes back to what you said before about that, that you're always looking for ways to improve yourself. That's that growth mindset. Well, I think that the evaluation system should as well. And I'm not sure, I mean, this is my 15th year in education. I know you have a few years on me, but I don't know that I've seen the evaluation system change very much or at all in 15 years. So I think that that one thing that evaluation systems have not gotten right is that concept of evolving and adapting to changing times. We have some of that with now the COVID situations. Like I said before, my school administrators are not giving us summative ratings and things like that, but the actual system is really still the same. So I don't know that we're seeing it evolve or change as much as it should.
Yeah, and I had read a couple of different articles in, I don't know, the last couple of weeks, just talking about teacher evaluations. And, you know, some are saying it's unfair, they shouldn't be evaluated in remote learning. And how do you do that? And do you have the administrators come into the meetings? And just so much back and forth. But it still comes down to the fact, like, they still need to do the teacher evaluations. And that's part of it. The evolving piece almost makes me think about, like, how is it evolving in an evolving system of education right now, teaching in different learning environments. And for a lot of teachers who may not have been using technology, that all of a sudden have to learn how to do everything that they were doing online and to balance all the demands that come with that. So potentially maybe that's part of it, I guess. But thinking about an article that I had read too, I think there were a lot of states that ended up, I don't know that they got rid of the evaluations they were doing, but I think that they kind of eased up on some of the requirements in terms of like the numbers of them, the annual performance data that I guess school districts have to submit. That was another thing they kind of eased up on that as well. And, you know, the pushback is, of course, administrators, education experts, teachers. I mean, we know that they're essential. So what do we do in that space or in that experience? Like, how do you kind of meet both sides where it's like, okay, this is really difficult for educators who are teaching in a remote learning environment. You're already stressed, nervous, maybe because you're bringing in all these different technologies or different methods, and you're not, I don't know, for me, like I've taught, like I said, for a while, and I use a lot of technology, but whenever I had to shift to virtual learning, and even just now in the past week is shifting to hybrid, I even said to somebody, I feel like I'm a first year teacher again, because there are so many things. And I couldn't imagine having an administrator, even though I said, I'm totally fine with just popping in and observing. But in these first couple of days, I cannot imagine that additional stress and worry about everything right now. So it's like, what do you do? And I've seen a lot of great ideas being shared out there, one of which being having teachers submit some ideas, focus on certain domains and Danielsons, and then do some reflections and make some portfolios or record videos or even invite administrators in to join in part of a class or something. So I don't know. There's a lot of ideas out there. And of course, nothing is going to be like, oh, that's the best idea ever. But there has to be some type of a change and shift where you kind of meet everybody's interests and needs and all and comfort levels too.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought up that point. You know, I wanted to, I guess, start wrapping up with the fact that in 38 minutes or so that we've been talking, I think what we're seeing, what we can kind of summarize in from this conversation is the fact that, yes, there are obviously important aspects to teacher evaluations. And I don't even think we've mentioned the word accountability yet, right? It's all part of the accountability. Teachers have to be accountable to their students and the student achievement. They also need to be held accountable to certain standards that the school has and the district has for them. And the administrators need to be able to speak to the techniques and the instructional strategies and things that teachers are doing. And of course, student performance. But, you know, having said all that, We know why the system should be set up and what the goals are of it. We also know that there are obviously flaws to it. We've highlighted some of those throughout the conversation. But I think what you just mentioned is a great way to wrap up. And basically what I took out of what you just said was that maybe there can be different systems that we start to explore. I actually worked for a district a couple of years ago where the superintendent had an idea to, and I think he had to get permission from the state, of course, but he said, you know, if we can do this kind of where the teacher is using action research, so they would basically, with their administrator, set a goal for themselves and then decide on some instructional strategies or methodologies that they're going to use to help better that situation. And when the administrator or the evaluator checks back in with them, they can say, I've done these things and here's the data to show whether or not they're working. I think that's a great thing. And unfortunately, where I'm at in my state, there are teachers who do that. But you know who they are? They're only the teachers in their first and second year, because they have to go through a mentoring and a training system in their first 2 years where they're doing that. And they're reflecting on the process and they do have to write papers, which I wouldn't necessarily advocate for teachers adding more to their plate than is already on them. And it's unfortunate that even the first and second year teachers have to do that. But I like that process. And I was really grateful to my superintendent for even suggesting it. Unfortunately, I don't think there was anyone in the district who actually took him up on the offer, but the offer was on the table. And I truly believe that if we can find more systems like that, that get the evaluation process to be a little less formalized, a little less standardized, and a little more authentic and meaningful and reflective for the teacher, then I think we will at least see the system change and teachers becoming more comfortable with it. But hopefully, the intended outcome also will be that student performance improves as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then there was something else when you were talking, it popped into my head to remind me from something before about talking about some of the ideas about evaluations in this remote learning environment or whatever it is right now. The portfolios, the other thing, because the need to see teachers actually teaching somehow, whether they're in the classroom or in the virtual space, some of them are even giving options for teachers to either invite administrator come in to part of a live class with the teacher and students, look at even a pre-recorded lesson, or look at a lesson that the teacher had taught after the fact. So I know in my school, we were, at least while we were virtual recording lessons. Now in hybrid, that's been something I need to work on, because balancing all the things, but it's good for us too as teachers. I mean, even if it's not part of an evaluation system, just our own self-evaluation for our own growth, to be able to look and say, huh, I didn't realize that I did that when I taught, or these are things that I can work on. I think it's a way to also build confidence and comfort in the evaluation process, just so you get that look at what it is like when you're teaching. And that's something that's been in conversation for years with some of these coaching platforms, or even some of the devices that we can use that kind of follow us around the classroom and observe us when maybe we even forget about something that's like, I don't want to name any products necessarily, but even just recording yourself or having somebody, a colleague work with you to kind of give you peer feedback to prep for that, because it can be an uncomfortable experience. But I don't know that there's one right answer, one best way, anything. But I guess, like with all things, we never know until we try something and then give the feedback. And I guess it probably goes the same for administrators. If they're doing evaluations and coming in and we have those conversations and we say, you know, I didn't really like this part of this evaluation, or I'm not real sure about these questions or this process, because they need the feedback as well. Although I don't know that I would feel comfortable sometimes saying, you know, I'm not really a big fan of this whole form or whatever. And it's, I don't know, maybe one day.
Well, you said it, I think you said it best a minute ago, where you said there may not be a right or wrong answer. And I kind of agree. And I'm going to apologize to any listener out there if they think that we have all the answers, because certainly we don't. And I'm not sure that anyone does. And so I hope that's not frustrating for you. But I hope that what we have done here in this conversation and all the conversations we have as part of the Devil's Advocate series is to, again, provide, you know, information and some thoughts and opinions about all angles of a topic. And I think this one, again, is a trending topic and a controversial topic. And I hope we shed a lot of light on it. But I know that there are a lot of people out there who have varying opinions, whether it's on one side or the other. So again, I would invite listeners to join us in these conversations. You can do that in a number of ways. You can find us, of course, on social media, and we will give you those handles in a minute. Or you can go to leaderoflearning.com/contact, or what we've had a couple of listeners do in the past is find us on Flipgrid and leave us a video response or an audio response if you'd like. You know, you don't want to be on the camera, that's fine too. And let us know what you think about the conversation. Maybe there's something we missed. Maybe there's an angle we didn't quite hit it from. But let us know. That's flipgrid.com/devilsadvocate. Or you can go to, again, leaderoflearning.com. And this episode will be located at leaderoflearning.com/evaluation. Let's call it that. Rochelle, where can people find you if they want more information from you?
Yeah, on Twitter, Instagram, RDENE915. Also, my blog site is pretty consistent. So any of those would be great.
And again, I am Dr. Krinus. That's Dr._Krinus, actually, on Twitter and Instagram. And leaderoflearning.com is the website. Thank you again, guys, so much for listening and for joining us here in this conversation, in this episode of Devil's Advocate. And thank you, Rochelle, again, for your time and your thoughts, as always.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We encourage you to help contribute to the series. If you want to suggest topic ideas or comment on any of the conversations we have about trending topics in education, please participate on Flipgrid using the topic code Devil's Advocate or visiting flipgrid.com/devilsadvocate. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to the Leader of Learning podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to others. I would also appreciate it if you'd leave a positive rating and review on iTunes or Podchaser. Links to leave ratings and reviews can be found in the show notes. Thanks, and see you again for another episode of The Devil's Advocate next month.